Yes, sir. Before we get started, what is your name, sir?
My name is Man Bang Wing, N-G-U-I-N.
Okay, Mayor, would you give the phone back to the CO3 for me?
Yes, sir.
CO3, is Mr. Stewart, is he close by, so we can do him first?
Yes, stand by.
Okay, and then we will.
This is Perot.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Perot.
Because
I'm gonna, leave at 11, so I just want to go ahead and do him, and then you can do yours next.
Oh, I see.
Okay, that's the only reason I'm trying to get Mr. Stewart here. Just trying to keep it going, that's all. Yes, sir, just one moment. Yes, sir.
Just a minute, sir.
Mr. Wright. Okay, sir, what is your name and ADC number, sir?
My name is Robert Stewart, 31833.
Mr. Stewart, you appear before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for your revocation, I'm sorry, for your parole hearing. That is, you have been certified by the Department of Corrections for a 412A, that is general parole, a 411, absolute discharge, or home arrest. And you appear before the board today, and as you can see, there are four board members participating in your hearing today. They are, to my right, your left, is the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse. Next to her is the Honorable Mr. Louis Kiwanis. To my left, your right, would be the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson. And my name is C.T. Wright. I'm serving as your panel chair at this time, sir. According to information that we have, and I'm going to just share some information with you that that's been provided to the board by the Department of Corrections, and just want to make sure that this information is correct and that you do agree with it. You're currently serving one offense, sir, and that is for rape, and the sentence began on September 23rd, 1972. You became parole eligible on January 23rd, 1986. Is that information correct, sir?
Yes.
And according to information that we have, that you that the last time you appeared before this board would have been back on March 20th of this year, 2017, and at that time you were denied for a 412A general parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest. We also show that in 2002, November the 7th in 2002, you appeared before this board and you were granted general parole. However, you were revoked on October the 20th, 2004. Is that correct, sir? You were granted parole and then you were revoked, sir?
Yes.
And why were you revoked, sir?
Initially, I was revoked for starting a relationship without notifying my parole officer. Then it evolved into my accosting someone who lived at the apartment complexes that I worked at.
And what were you revoked? Was there some young person involved, or what happened, sir?
It was a 19-year-old girl that I met at the apartment complex, who I initiated a conversation with. We had about a 30-minute conversation, and I volunteered to give her a brochure from the Grand Chamber of Commerce that were places to sightsee throughout the state. She was new here from Chicago, and her and her boyfriend were just becoming familiar with Arizona, and so I told her that I would drop that off for her to look at, and that later that evening, about 9 o'clock, I just come out of Burlington, Senate, Mass., law, and I swung by there to drop off the brochure, and I went to knock at her apartment, and no one was there. I ran into a guy who told me that the person I was looking for didn't even live there, and that I was trespassing, and I said that I was that I worked there, that I met a girl named Megan, and I told her that I would leave with this brochure, and he says, "Well, I don't know what you're talking about," so I went. And that Sunday, after I had visited with my daughter who lived there in South Phoenix, I swung by there and thought if I saw her, I'd give it to her. If I didn't, then I would put it in the company truck and then just give it to her when I saw her when we went to work at that facility. Well, I went by there and I didn't see her, although the same guy that I had met who told me that she had lived there had followed me out and got my license number and called the police. And the police said that, you know, I hadn't committed any crime or didn't hit anything wrong. So they didn't get involved. Somewhere they got out to the internet and saw that I was a registered sex offender, and it actually gave them information that I was on parole, and my parole officer was notified, and so I was called in to talk to my parole officer. I went in I was questioned. The supervisor was going to put me on a monitor supervision. Mr. Scully, who was my parole officer's supervisor at the time, but my parole officer objected to it. He didn't feel comfortable. He thought that I needed to suffer some sort of consequence. The woman that she was terrified of me, that I'm a registered sex offender and people don't want us out there. And I needed to have some consequence for it. And so they deliberated. I was called back into the office.
So you were revoked. In other words, that's the bottom line. You were revoked and for that violation. I also take note, sir, back in 1986, you were also granted parole, and then you were revoked in 1993. Do you remember that, sir?
Yeah, yes, I do.
So that means that twice you violated twice while being out. You had your liberty, you had your freedom, and then you just violated. Okay, I'm going to move on, and we can discuss that later with other board members. I also would take note, sir, just for information, that you appeared before this board over 50 times, and aside from those two times when you were granted parole, otherwise you were denied or you did not appear, so I just wanted to put that on the record as well. You probably appeared for this board more than any other board member, I believe, any other person since I've been on this board. You really had your meetings with this board in the past. I would take note, sir, that we do have your progress report, and I note that you had a number of programs. One that interests me the most, and I want you to just tell me where you are at this particular time, is the one that's deal with sex offenders. I know you've taken that, I believe, twice. You've taken it in, it showed February 2nd of this year, and I think also I saw that you had taken something dealing with sexual offenders back in November of 2014. So have you completed any of the sex offender classes as of this moment, sir?
Well, I've completed 2 years of sex offender treatment. I got involved in 2005 when I was recommended by one of the parole board members who violated my parole. said that he would like to see me go through treatment before he ever considered me for parole again. So I got into the program in 2005. I completed the 3 years, and then in 2013, I was asked by one of the therapists if I would be a facilitator for the program. And so I joined back on with the Sex Offender Treatment Program in 2013. And I stayed involved with it until May of this year. I went to Braille to try to get a trade. Consequently, they weren't, they did have some contract issues, and so I felt kind of stagnated there, so I got back and I'm again a facilitator with the Sex Offender Treatment Program. I stayed involved in terms of maintenance groups on a continual basis since I got into the program in 2005. I have, you know, committed myself to be myself in that environment. It helps to keep me grounded. It's been a significant part of my life. I've never really invested in any type of program. I didn't think I ever needed treatment. I didn't think I needed to change. I thought that, you know, just doing the time alone would suffice, and I could go out there and do the right things. But there were things that I needed to get in touch with and things that I needed to understand about myself.
Okay, sir. I commend you for all of the programming that you've taken, sexual offender programming. I also take note as part of your progress report that if you're released, that you would want to move in with your brother in Phoenix, and to that you would also work with your brother. I believe that you have a brother who's in the room at participating in this hearing, and that most of your family would be living in the same area that you would be living in, so you would have a good support system. So if you are released, or when you're released, you're still interested in residing with your brother, sir?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
Okay, sir. Let me ask one other question. When the last time did you have a discipline, sir? When the last time did you have a write-up, sir?
I believe that was in 2004 or 5.
Yeah, 2005. You have not had one, according to AIM, since 05. So since 05, from 05 until now, you've been doing quite well as it relates to discipline. I'm just going to make a brief statement about the offense, and then you can tell the board anything else you want to tell us about the offense or anything else. But according to information that I've gleaned, that September 23rd, 1972, that the defendant, you were, I guess at that time, you were 20 years of age, and then you forced your way into the entry to the victim's residence, and she was 33, and you raped her. And she, at the time, her husband had gone to work at the airport, and then her doorbell rang, and guess who was there? It was you who showed up and took advantage of her, and she also had a three-year-old son in the residence, and when he woke up, supposedly, according to the pre-sentence report, you told her to put him back in bed or that you would kill him. And then as it relates to the rape charge, then you pleaded guilty. Now that's just a very brief summary, but is that information basically correct, sir?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think that I don't remember the certain parts of it, but I'm not denying any of the parts of it because I was drunk, so I don't deny anything that the victim said happened. But some of the events I do recollect, and I did force myself into that home, and I did go to her, and I did subject her to terror in the time that I was there, and I can't even tell you how long I was there in her home, how, you know, I evaded her sense of security. I would guess 30 to 45 minutes.
Did you know her by chance? Did you know the...
As an excuse.
Did you know the victim? Did you know her at all?
No, I didn't.
Well, why didn't you select that residence to go into, sir?
I saw a light on, and I was running from the police because I was broke down, and I had some marijuana on me, and I was running, and I saw a light on there, and I went and knocked on the door.
Let me just ask one other question, then I'm going to yield to other board members. And this question is, I'm skipping around now. Inasmuch as you had your freedom twice, as I've already indicated, and you violated them twice, why do you think this board should trust you again and release you back out into the public? Why do you think that the board should do that? You let the board down, you let the state of Arizona down, you let your family down, you let yourself down twice already. I know it was a long time ago, in 2004, the last time, but why do you think this board ought to put its trust in you again, sir?
Well, and I agree with you. I did let everybody down, including myself. I'm so much more aware of the if anything legacy I want to leave behind, and it's certainly not somebody who's spent the rest of their life in prison or having to be supervised or put in chains. I have learned so much about myself in the last 13 years. The first time I ever invested in treatment to seriously want to see why it is I just want to quote Paul in the Bible when he says, why is it I do the things I don't want to do and the things I want to do I don't do? This has confounded me. Treatment has helped me to understand what my triggers are, has helped me to understand what my values are. I never considered anything about values. I thought values was something that you got in the store. But when I came to make an assessment of the things that are important to me, my family is important to me, my freedom is important to me, my integrity is important to me, and if those things are important to me, if those things are in fact important, then every decision I ever make from now on will be based on my family, will be based on my freedom, and will be based on my integrity. Every decision. And I do that here. I monitor myself, I regulate myself, and I constantly remind myself of how I want to be projected and how I want to be the example I want to be for others, because I believe and know now that change is possible. I never invested in change because I never really believed I had to change, that you know, you guys had it all wrong. But when I had to face myself and through the treatment process, when I was being confronted by fellow members, you know, who were having me answer to the truth, it really opened my eyes to a whole different world that I would like to be a part of. And, you know, I know I don't have any more chances. I'm 65 years old.
Mr. Stewart, do you have any other...
So much time.
Do you have any other relatives aside from your brother, sir?
I have an uncle in Mesa. I have aunts in Glendale, Arizona. I have a lot of cousins in Glendale, Arizona. I have my sister in Phoenix.
Are any of them on your visitors list there at the... they're at the prison? Any of them on your visitors list, sir?
Just my brothers, but I write to him and I talk to him on the phone.
Okay, well, we're glad to know that you stay in contact with your brother.
Every 2 weeks.
Okay, now at this time, I'm going to see if other board members might have some questions for you before I invite your brother to come up. Board members, okay. Questions for Mr. Stewart. Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. Mr. Stewart, it looks like, unless this information is incorrect, our packet indicates that there were more rapes than just this rape. I mean, there were some charges in 1972, three different charges and possibly others. What about, you said you've attended the treatment, sex offender treatment in the last 13 years or so. What specifically about treatment, what stands out in your mind? What is the maybe top couple of things that have changed in you as a result of going to that treatment?
I think the most significant thing is just being aware. I think, constantly regulating myself and knowing, how I respond to my feelings. It's, first of all, being a man, I never really thought about feelings. If I only knew how to be angry and I could identify that, but I never knew how to identify any of the other feelings that I was experiencing. So, to be aware of how I'm feeling and how I respond to those feelings. And I'll give you an example. A trigger for me is the feeling of boredom. When I'm bored, I had this sense I gotta create some excitement. I gotta get out there and do something. And normally the things that I would do would go out and party and go out and drink and get high and socialize. And this would bring out a different, it's like the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde syndrome. And so it's being aware and substituting how I react and respond to my feelings differently. Like one of my things that I enjoy more than anything is writing. I'm published. I never had a goal. I never had something, a sense of accomplishment. And that happened to be something else that really dug into my self-esteem, my self-worth. To be accepted by the writing community is just an overwhelming sense of accomplishment. To have writers, invest in giving me, information of, how to maybe rewrite something I'm writing and to be considered for other publications. One of the things that is a part of my bucket list is to get out there and be a part of the writing community. And to finish in a book that I'm putting together right now.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Dr. Ray.
Okay, thank you. Board members, further questions? Honorable Mr. Johnson.
So I just have one question for you. So after going through some of your documentation, you talked a little bit earlier about when you had your parole, you were revoked for going over to the female's house, you were going to drop off some paperwork.
Yes, sir.
In the apartment complex. I tell you, what concerns me about that, sir, going over there, what time was it you went over there?
Well, I remember Burlington's was just getting ready to close. And that was about 9 o'clock.
Okay.
Burlington's from that apartment complex was on Apache Boulevard. Was like maybe 10, 15 minutes away. I figured somewhere around 9:30. Now, my parole officer says that I was there at 1 o'clock. I asked my parole officer to get a copy of the cameras, because he had cameras there, that he could see for himself that I arrived there somewhere around 9:30.
Okay. I was looking at the report, sir, and it does indicate something like 1 or 1:30.
Yeah, that's what my parole officer said. I also invited my parole officer to contact the hotel I was staying at was the Windsor Hotel, and one of the practices that my ex-wife had proposed for me was to keep a record of when I came in and I came out, and one of the managers there would sign the card of my entering and exiting, and so I asked my parole officer if he would talk to that manager, that specific manager, and to see what time it was that I came back to the hotel. Bottom line is I had no business going there. I had no business putting myself in that kind of situation that did the appearance of wrongdoing in the first place.
Right. So my concern, sir, is that going over there, knocking on that door, is pretty much similar to what occurred in the original incident that you were arrested for, knocking on the door. Female answers the door, then forces entry. But you knocked on the door, no one answered, someone came. So that concerns me, sir. How are you? Do you feel as though you are really finally triggers and cured from doing, for having those impulses?
I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Okay, so sir, can you hear me better?
I'm sorry, I don't have my mic on.
So sir, the incident that you, on the parole that you revoked on, and there's a difference of discrepancy in the time, but however, the fact that you went over there, you knocked on the door, and no one answered, at that time, is similar to the impulse that you had when you were arrested for the sexual assault, knocking on the door, someone answers the door and then forces your way inside. That MO is kind of similar to what had happened. So I'm just trying to understand, are you understanding what your triggers are, and do you think that you have gotten over those impulses to commit those type of acts?
I do believe I'm at a point now that I regulate myself on a regular basis. In my maintenance contract plan that I sent to you guys, I'm not sure whether you got the copy of it, but I'm putting this contract together. There's all these general control issues that I focused on to keep myself monitored a lot of times. And I'm going to make this little laminated card, and I put that as an example in my maintenance contract plan. And on that laminated card, I'm going to have one side that has list my triggers: feeling bored, feeling lonely, feeling rejected. And on the other side of that card are my interventions: managing my time effectively, getting involved in social activities, arts, creative writing, etc., using a positive self-talk. So, to make a distinction between where I am now and where I was then, I don't regulate myself out there. I was so alienated. I didn't know that there was this thing that happened when people transition out of prison. There's this disorientation, there's this alienation, there's all these different emotional traps that we're going to go through whether we like it or not. And if we're not aware of these emotional traps, then we put ourselves in precarious situations. I made it a point to not only know what those are for me, but I teach it in my four agreements class. So I'm constantly practicing. It's like whatever I'm learning now in the program, whatever I'm learning now in my four agreements class, whatever I'm learning now about spirituality and God, if I don't practice that today, if I don't put that in motion today, I'm not going to become good at it. So those are the things that I'm practicing on a daily basis. A lot of guys think that, you go through a program and I'll use it when I get out. Well, It doesn't work like that. It's got to be something that you implement immediately. And so I've been living this. I've been living it for the last several years. And I'm doing a lot of work now that I've ever been in my life.
Okay,
I just want this opportunity to demonstrate that and show you that I am salvageable.
All right, thank
and
you, sir.
I've invested all these years into that.
Okay, thank you so much, sir. Thank you, Honorable Mr. Johnson. Any further questions by board members at this time? Is there none? Okay, is Mr. Gilbert Stewart, please come forward, sir. And please state your name for the record, sir.
My name is Gilbert Stewart. I'm Robert's oldest brother. I appreciate the time seeing me again. I just wanted to also stress that Pete has been in contact with us. Every 2 weeks we talk to him. Members of the family talk to him. This has been ongoing since before my mom passed away 3 years ago. And we were doing it her last 6-7 months of her life. We talked to him. He has the full support of a family. If he does get out, we're going to be watching him probably like a hawk. The home that he's going to, that we've picked for him, that he's, is my mom's house, but it belongs to all of us. She left it to all of us. I have three other brothers that live there. We live probably 8 to 10 minutes away from the house, so we're all in close proximity. We have relatives that are, my uncle is actually going to be, he wanted to go visit with him, so we just celebrated his 84th birthday, and the whole family gets together. We're a very close-knit family. We're Catholics, we're religious, and we feel that he's more than ready to come out to society. He knows what he's done. Some of his records are, I've talked to him about some of the things that you asked about, and he's totally denied a lot of it. It's been other rapes that he was supposedly accused of that none of us know about, and I've been very explicit with him about speaking to him on these facts, and he says, I don't know, I've told him before, that said, but no one listens. The situation with this last that sent him back, the hours, you have 1:30, he said 9:30, I know he came from Burlington, was closing, so they all didn't mix right. I know that he meant well because of being an Arizona native. He knows quite a bit, especially up in Globe, Miami, which is a mining town that we all came from. We all were born there. Not all of us, there's a couple of us that aren't, but there's 8 kids altogether. He has 6 brothers and 1 sister, and we're all in total support of him. Like I said, we feel that he's ready. He's got to the point now, I can feel that he's got feeling like he's never going to, things is never going to happen because of the 2 parole. There was extenuating circumstances for the first one, and then this situation that happened last time, which it was a place he shouldn't have gone there. He was aware of the fact that being nice is sometimes not situated with the same feelings that you get from a convict that you do a regular person on the street that lives out here. But in so doing, my family is totally behind me. I'm the eldest, as I said before, but we feel that we're ready to support him when he does come out more strongly than when he had come out before. He has a family, he has grandkids that he's never seen, and I want you, the board, to know that he is in total remorse for what he did. And all the classes, I've gotten all the information, and his risk assessments were 0 and low, and helping other inmates with the same problem that he teaches them. They actually have him teaching as a mentor. I spoke with one officer when I was down there that knew he was going to speak in front of a graduating class because of his ideas, and for what I understand, that's what he wants to along with his writing, because he's getting publications of his writings now. He's very into that. But he wanted to also help others. If he did come out, there was a program that he could help as a mentor out here on the
I'm going to ask you to sum it up, sir.
That's pretty much it.
Thank you. That's fair. Questions, board members? That's been very helpful. Thank you. Yes.
I know we need to kind of move along, but I do want to ask this question because I recognize that you're very supportive. If you thought your brother was showing signs of reoffending or being on the brink of reoffending, what would your immediate action be?
My immediate action would actually just sit with him as far as the rest of the family. Me being the oldest, I have a medical training. I was a medic in the military. I was a United States Army medical. And a lot of the things that have happened to him, I've read about. Especially the assessments, I've read what they've said about him. And it's got to the point where we're always going to be on the watch with him. We're always going to be there to support him, so that if anything happens and he feels anything, any kind of depression or boredom or loneliness, we got a big family. And we're very close. Our mothers raised us that way. It's nothing like us to hug each other and tell each other our love and love each other, because that's what she taught us. And I know that I speak for my family as well, even the elders. But we're losing our elders now. And I mean, I'm 67 next month. So I'm the oldest. So just seeing that he hurts so much because he has grandchildren. I'm in contact with his daughter. His daughter calls me all the time asking me how things are. And there was a clash between him and his in-laws. And
I think to sum it up, I think our board chairman was kind of moving along. But you did answer the question, and I do appreciate it.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you, sir.
Is there anyone else wishes to speak on behalf of Mr. Robert Stewart? Anyone else? Okay, no one else? Okay, now, Mr. Stewart, we're going to give you, I'm going to say, about 2 minutes to make a final statement to the board without repeating yourself. Anything else you want to tell the board before the board goes into discussion and makes its decision whether to grant you a parole or absolute discharge or home arrest? Anything else you want to tell the board now, sir?
Well, nothing that I would repeat. I've talked to you guys about my enthusiasm for the treatment program and my writing, and I hope that you would see from all the documents that I've sent, all the letters and assessments that have been made by the program itself, which are state employees, people who work for the Department of Corrections, who have made these assessments of where I'm at in terms of my treatment progress. So I would hope that would speak about my character today, also my disciplinary. I throw myself at the mercy of this board, and I promise you that I won't let this board down. And I will let myself down. Thank you.
Thank you so very much, sir. At this time, the board is going into discussion. We're going to ask that you remain quiet. And following this discussion, the board will make its determination. Of course, we do everything in public, as you probably know, because we operate under the open meeting laws of the state of Arizona. The board is now in discussion. This is a very interesting, tragic situation. First of all, I want to commend Mr. Stewart for progress that he's made, the writings that he's done, the contributions that he's made to the Department of Corrections as a facilitator with all of the certificates and other awards and support that we find in his file. I still, as one board member, I'm not speaking on behalf of the board, I still have some concerns. One is, as was discussed earlier by, I believe it was Mr. Johnson, his previous record, he has little or no record recollection of what might have happened in the past, and I'm talking about the pre-this offense. My other concern is, and I know that it was a long time ago, but chronologically speaking, but he was given that opportunity twice to have his freedom, and he just didn't accept it. I'm just wondering, in my mind, as one board member, is he really ready to accept it now, or will he get out and violate again? I recognize the fact that he has support of the family. I recognize the fact that his brother is definitely supporting him, and I believe that other board, other family members are supporting him, but it's going to be his determination to make sure that he's ready and that he would not offend again. And as one board member, I'm just not convinced as of this time. But before making a final judgment on my part, I would like to listen to other board members. Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse.
Dr. Wright, thank you. I thought about what you said too, but the other thing that I did consider is he mentioned he gave 13 years as about the time he started in the treatment. And that would be about the time that he was revoked. And maybe that is what, you know, finally triggered him in his mind to change. So, I mean, I just throw that out as something we might consider, because people mature, people change. We all know that because we see it daily. And with his family support, I wouldn't say if there was no family support, but I just think he could be successful.
Okay, thank you so very much. Other board members?
Dr. Wright, he does have good family support, and I kind of think with the help of his family, he could possibly make it. I'm going to tell you, I just got a problem with this one that he was revoked on, because the female says that it was 1:30 in the morning when he was knocking on her door. And she actually called the neighbor, who came over and asked him to leave. And the neighbor states that it was 1:30 in the morning. And he is still saying that it was like 9 o'clock when he left Burlington. That kind of bothers me, at the fact that this is the same M.O. that was used in the sexual assault that he was done in. And I think if you know, his recollection is kind of off, but there's a victim and a witness who both say that it was 1:30 in the morning when this occurred, as opposed to 9:30. If he has truly learned from it, then he would have learned that's what the concern, because that seemed to be one of those impulses where, it was early in the morning. I was on the one, and he got picked up on. He went over there and knocked on the door. A lady answered the door and forced his way in. This is one of those same situations. Went over there, knocked on the door, until it was pounding on the door. And the female never answered the door. She called the neighbor next door and asked the neighbor to come over and have her leave. And which he didn't create a problem, he did leave. But, that was in 04. So we are talking about 13 years has passed since that time has come. And he has family support. He does have, I guess he's going to be living in a house with three brothers or two brothers that could possibly be looking out for him, but there's no way that I would be supportive unless he was on some type of extensive monitoring system that he would be doing. And it's only because I'm having a little bit of problem. I think after 13 years, he's gone through some classes, he's done some things, and he has worked on turning himself around. But I'm concerned about that impulse that he has. And his statement, of what he's making the statement of about here, that Burlington's closed around 9, and it was somewhere around 9 o'clock, that it's obvious that it was 1:30, which is stated by the female and the neighbor who she called and said that it was 1:30 in the morning. That concerns me, that I think that he was in the process of possibly, having an impulse to commit another sexual assault at that time.
Thank you, Honorable Mr. Johnson. Honorable Mr. Kowalski.
Thank you. I won't belabor this because I think Mr. Johnson covered quite a bit of my concerns, narrowing it down to what led to his revocation. and the impulse factor. That's what I was thinking about the entire time. I will say that I don't want to take away all of the good work he's put in to his sex offender treatment and the support of his family, which I think is very meaningful, which is why I think the dialogue is so important. It's not that I absolutely disagree with Ms. Rittenhouse, but I have some instinctive concerns about the impulse factor. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Well, I'm going to offer a motion, then we can see where it goes, and otherwise we can offer a counter motion. So we always have that opportunity. And my motion is going to be to deny joint parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest. And that is my motion.
Second.
Agree.
I agree.
Okay. Motion by myself, seconded by Mr. Kiwanis, agreed by Ms. Rittenhouse and Mr. Johnson. And he does not qualify for a 1-year sentence. He, I don't think he does. And reasons for denial, again, any time rape takes place, in my opinion, and other board members might disagree, it is serious and violent offense. Serious and deviant behavior. There's always trauma to the victim whenever rape is involved. And just as a male, and I can't speak for a female, but I also feel that it's serious to bodily injury when rape takes place. Of course, he has good family support. He has a release plan. Is there anything else that any board member wishes to include at this time? He has programming because he's a facilitator himself. Is there anything else that a board member wishes to include? Hearing nothing else. So you heard the termination of this board. Your community's, I mean, your parole has been denied. That is general parole, home arrest, or absolute discharge. Is there any, do you understand, sir?
Yes, sir, I understand.
And you will be certified. The board did not have a 1-year set off. Therefore, you will be certified in 6 months to appear before this board again. The board will be looking forward to seeing you at that time. Good luck, and we want to thank your brother for being here today and the support that he's given to you as well. Your hearing is over, and thank you so very much for your participation. Please put the CO3 back on the form, sir.
All right, you have a Merry Christmas.
And the same to you, sir.